Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Before we begin, if you like what you hear on Mile High Report Radio Podcast, don't forget to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, and go ahead and click subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Mile High Report Radio with your hosts, Adam Malnati and Ian St. Clair. Get involved with the Denver Broncos conversation at milehighreport.com. And now, it's time to get to work.
Well, we have a special podcast. It's a joint combination of MHR Radio and Cover 2 Broncos. And our guest is Joe Rolls. So we're going to be chatting Broncos. You've heard the MHR Radio podcast for the week. You'll hear Cover 2 Broncos with Joe. But we decided let's just do a joint podcast. Let's get everyone together and talk Broncos. So, Joe, thanks for coming on and chatting with us.
I cannot remember the last time I was this optimistic about the Broncos. I think Peyton Manning was playing.
Well, that was like 10 years ago.
Feels like 10 years
ago. I wasn't even alive then. Yeah, no, you know what, though? I'll echo that a little bit. When we talked about this the other day, Ian and I, there was a little bit of like, you know, this could go okay. Like, it was not like, oh my god, they're gonna be amazing, but just the feeling of okayness kind of is washing over me in a weird sort of way, which ends up being maybe not okay in the end. I don't know, we'll kind of examine that as we keep going here.
In terms of the season and how you think it'll go, Joe, obviously a lot of people hope it's a playoff team. If you look at the various sports books, they have the Broncos somewhere between 8.5 and 9 wins. Where do you fall in line with how this season is going to end up? Are they going to be a playoff team, and how many wins do you think they're going to get in the regular season?
I think they are going to be a playoff team, and I have 11 kind of like in my thought. Like, and I know that seems really optimistic, and I will be honest, I normally, and people, you know, listening probably know this, I'm normally not very optimistic. But I mean, they have an easy schedule. And again, you know, AFC West not like withstanding, obviously the Chiefs are still the Chiefs, but this Broncos roster, if they would have gotten Aaron Rodgers, and you and I have talked about this before, Ian, if they would have got Aaron Rodgers, they were probably one of the two or three best teams in football. Well, yeah, obviously they didn't get him, but I think we're sleeping on how good Teddy Bridgewater is. And I'm not saying he's going to be, you know, a Hall of Famer, but like, there's like this weird split. Like, I've talked to a lot of analytics people. I've talked to a lot of film people at this point. There's this weird split where people who have watched a lot of film of Teddy Bridgewater, he doesn't wow you. Like, he's not going to be the guy. Like, and Broncos fans will probably be in this boat where it's like, he's going to probably be too conservative for people to love him. But at the same time, when you go and look at the efficiency metrics later, and that's how you win games, he's efficient. Like, he moves the ball. And the one big issue he had in Carolina is kind of mitigated with the Broncos roster. His arm strength may be an issue around the red zone, but the thing is, the Broncos were really, really good in power situations last year by Football Outsiders metrics. Like, so in short yardage and red zone area, the Broncos run game is really good. And now they have Javonte Williams, and their line should be better.
Yeah, I see where you're going with that. I like that you went, I think you went out on a limb there and said 11 wins. I don't think we were that high on them. My positivity got me all the way to 8 wins. Like, that was, I was like, all the way to 8. It's amazing. And that is,
and I got them to 9. But I did throw out 2 games where they could potentially get to 11. And so I can see where it can flip just based on a couple of games. And I think it does come down to Teddy Bridgewater, and I get the excitement. I've said on our podcast that I don't mind boring. I would prefer a boring, steady Teddy than someone who's going to go out and dance when he completes a pass.
Yeah, that's a nice way of saying that, I think. Boring is good right now, but if boring leads to wins, right? I think that's the other exactly. part of it. So I'm fine with Teddy being boring, right? Steady Teddy Two Gloves is phenomenal if Steady Teddy Two Gloves is winning football games. But if it's boring and losing, I'm losing interest in that because that's where we've been for a while now. And the excitement of Drew Locke and his dancing and his rapping and his, you know, Buzz Lightyear stuff and all of the rock star stuff. I remember which website tweeted out that he was a rock star. And that was the difference between him and all these other quarterbacks that they've had, like, yikes. I don't care if he's a rock star. I can't do the up and down. I want the steady, but I need the wins or I'm out. I'm out without wins because that's where all of us should be at this point with this team.
And I'm with you. And that's like, I'm at a point where because I've been consistently in the camp where I think Teddy Bridgewater, I thought Teddy Bridgewater was going to win the competition as far back as soon as we realized Aaron Rodgers wasn't coming. And this isn't necessarily, again, I'm not saying that Teddy Bridgewater is going to light the house on fire and, like, you know, lead us to the Pro Bowl, you know, all that stuff, but he's competent. And you look around him on offense, like this roster was basically waiting for a competent quarterback. Like Case Keenum would probably look like a decent quarterback on this roster, as long as Jerry Jeudy, Cortland Sutton, KJ Hamler, Noah Fant, as long as these guys make the step that we expect them to, not even like a huge step, but just what we expect them to based on what we've seen of them so far. They just need a quarterback who can actually put the ball in their hands. And Teddy Bridgewater's that guy. And so at that point, then it's basically, can the line hold up? Can the defense stay healthy enough? And then can Shurmur not shit the bed? And that last part is like a real question. And I've been trying to get to the bottom of that. And again, like I am not, Twitter does this, you know, you can't do nuance on Twitter. I come off as very high on Shurmur because I don't hate on Shurmur, but I think he's a competent coordinator. Like he made Case Keenum look like a passable quarterback. He made Eli Manning, like the husk of Eli Manning, look like a passable quarterback. Daniel Jones had the best season of his career so far with Pat Shurmur. Drew Locke is like kind of the outlier there. And again, I'm not trying to say it's all Shurmur, all Locke, all anything, but like Broncos fans base everything they, not all of them, but a lot of Broncos fans base a lot of their thoughts on Shurmur based on what happened last year. But he's been in the league long enough that we can look beyond that and see he's been about an average coordinator. Well, you give him the kind of talent he has around him and a quarterback who's not going to be abysmal, we might have something. And again, if the defense is as good as we hope, and again, the whole question with Chubb is kind of hanging over that. But if the defense can kind of live up to what I hope for, they might make some noise. And that's where I'm at with it.
Chubb hanging over. I'm putting a check mark. That's fantastic. Chubb hanging over. I like that one. You know what? I'm going to actually sort of hit you with a counterpoint to your hanging Chubb. I don't think his, I don't think his injury is actually, if it's an injury, like nobody knows, right? With Bradley Chubb, hands in the air, who has any idea what's going on there? Nobody really cares. The fact that the Broncos had as good a defense as they did in 2020 with no Von Miller on the field should make you realize how little they really need Bradley Chubb. Now I'm not dogging on Chubb because I don't want to do that, but
you can't dog on a Chubb.
If you do, it gets scratchy. It doesn't really hurt them.
You need the Chubb to perform. You can't dog on it.
I guess the point, if I can get to it, is as long as the defense is as good as they were last year, I believe that the offense really is the only thing that needs to improve. And Bradley Chubb not being on the field every single week, every single down, it doesn't hurt them as much as some people might think. The only thing it really does, and this is the worst part about football, especially when you're on a team that loses all the time, is it makes people reevaluate the draft pick. I think that's what ends up happening with the Bradley Chubb situation. The more often he's injured, the less he's on the field, the more issues he faces, the more often you hear people who want to get all over Chubb for not being able to get on the field and being a bad pick, right? That was a bad draft.
Or Elway grabbing Chubb instead of Josh Allen.
Right, because Josh Allen was there, but Elway couldn't resist Chubb. And that's, you know, that gets frustrating.
Chubbs can be, you know.
So are you insinuating that Elway blew it?
I am not insinuating that, but I am saying that there are several people out there who believe that Elway's overeagerness about Chubb maybe limited his.
Well, when you get to Elway's age, when you get a Chubb, you grab it.
You got to take advantage of a Chubb when it's there, and I think we all understand that. Especially
we got
Elway.
Off the rails on this one.
It did. What? How long was it? Five,
we might have
6 minutes?
20.
We didn't even get into 10 minutes there, and we are going to have to
we are deep
explicit.
In Chubb.
To your point, though, and again, like for those listening, because again, not everybody keeps up with this stuff like I do. I don't care about raw stats normally. I don't keep up with like counting stats, just because like the situations influence that a lot. Like, not to get, you know, too deep in the weeds on that, but like if your offense is dog shit, your defense is going to be on the field more often. So because of that, your defense will look worse by raw yards. So one of the reasons that's one of the big reasons why I care about like efficiency stats, just because that kind of stuff, like Football Outsiders does a good job of this, where they measure how good you're doing in the situation you're in based around like league average, all that stuff. Based on that, the Broncos without Von Miller last year were the 13th best defense in football. And again, that is incredible. And again, people think I, this is like the whole Twitter thing. I don't think Vic Fangio is infallible as a head coach. Like, I have big issues with how he manages the clock, and I hope to God he fixes that this year. But in terms of defense, there is no doubt in my mind that he is one of the best defensive coaches in football. He's one of the only defensive coaches who actually gave Pat Mahomes any problems. In that first Chiefs game, they went 0-for-8 on third down. Like, if Melvin Gordon and Drew Lock didn't shit their pants, that game is close. But no, and to your point, Adam, like, I think losing Chubb, like, if they didn't have him for the whole season, would show up against, like, teams like Cleveland and, like, obviously the Chiefs, stuff like that. But the thing is, the NFL is probably taking it easy on Denver. We got three games to start the season that are very winnable. The New York Giants, honestly, may be the toughest of the three, which is kind of crazy to think about. They have the weakest quarterback by far, but like the rest of their roster is actually like somewhat capable if they're healthy. But then you look at the Jaguars and the Jets, and like they both have rookie quarterbacks, but they're both probably going to be better than Daniel Jones. But they both have rookie quarterbacks because they had the first two picks in the draft. So the Broncos should be able to get out of this starting stretch 2-1 if things don't fall out really badly.
So even losing Chubb, they won't shrink from the situation?
They shouldn't.
Let obviously we hope they start 3-0 as Broncos fans. That would be the ideal situation, especially with the games that follow those first three games.
Baltimore's gonna be tough.
The Ravens, the Steelers, the Chiefs twice. We'll get in. To me, the key of this, the whole key to the season is going to be the last three games, which are AFC West teams. But what if the Broncos don't start 3-0 or 2-1? What will that tell you about this team?
It depends how it happens to me. And again, like, hot take radio is going to go really, really wild if the Broncos start like 1-2, no matter how good they look. Like, remember when the Broncos lost to the Bears, but they actually looked pretty good and they got robbed at the end because Mitch Trubisky somehow called that timeout with 0.1 seconds left. Like, I was upset in that game. And yeah, the defense definitely underperformed that game. But like, I came out of that game thinking like, this team is close to winning like those games. Obviously Jacksonville came after that, and that was a shit show. But like, if they end up having three close games and they win one, lose two, I'm going to be pretty, it hurts their playoff chances. There's no doubt about that, because the rest of their schedule is going to be so much tougher. But at that point, like, hot take radio at that point is going to say, start Drew Lock. If Bridgewater looks good, but the defense isn't good because Chubb is hurt, I don't think Locke was that close to Bridgewater in the preseason, in all honesty, where it makes sense to pull Bridgewater unless he looks bad. Just because I think Bridgewater, and again, like, this isn't me saying he's a world beater. I know I'm going to say that 100 times. Sorry. But he helps the rest of the offense. And that's like the secret underneath all this, is like the fact that he wins pre-snap, the fact that he actually puts the ball in people's hands reliably, the fact that he can actually manage a pocket. Like, one of the reasons why everybody's thought the Broncos offensive line is bad for so long is because they've had quarterbacks that don't do anything to help them look better. Granted, also, there's also problems on the offensive line, but there's always problems on the offensive line. It's the NFL. No one has five good linemen. The Broncos, this Broncos offensive line is actually probably one of the 15, 16 best in football.
That's nice. That's good to have. You know, it's interesting.
I'll take it.
Yeah, of course. You know, you bring up the idea of what happens with, you know, sure, sports talk radio, the Twitterverse, people who are following the Broncos, and how quickly things will turn on Teddy Bridgewater if they don't go 2-1, right, 3-0, 2-1, that kind of thing.
Broncos Facebook.
Sure. Whichever, Reddit, I don't know. There is that possibility that, and it's a distinct possibility, that if they do not come out of these first three games with at least two wins, there's going to be a big push for you might as well start Drew Lock. I mean, and I remember after the Minnesota game, everybody was, and myself included, just give it to Drew Lock and let's see what happens. And to me, part of that is we know what Teddy Bridgewater is, and I think people wanted to figure out what Drew Lock was.
Yeah.
But for the coaching staff and for the management who are, quite frankly, coaching for their jobs and managing for their jobs, I'm sure, maybe not George Payton as much as Vic Fangio, because George Payton just showed up, there's no reason for them to ever make that switch unless they are like 1-5 or maybe 1-4. So you're looking at 4 or 5 games into the season before you're even going to have that consideration from Vic Fangio and his coaching staff. Is that, to me, is that really something that Broncos fans should be concerned with? Do they get to a point where they end up at 1-4 or 1-5? And at that point, is it the quarterback that has to go, or are you looking at moving on from the coaching staff?
I think if the coaching, if they open like 1-5 or 0-6, it would not surprise me at that point if Shermer ends up taking the interim head coaching job. And I don't, and again, I'm not rooting for this by any means, but I mean, there's a reason sports books are putting Fangio as the first coach fired. Like, he inherited the GM. The GM doesn't owe him anything. And honestly, if you're Peyton and the bottom falls out in the beginning of the year, at that point, if they're like 1-5, that bad, maybe that's how you save face and keep heat off you for passing on a quarterback. I'm not saying I want that to happen, because I think that does make Peyton look pretty bad too. But
what's the most likely scenario, do you think? 2-1 or 3-0? Because I don't think they're going to lose two games. I think they're at least going to start 2-1. But what's the most likely to you?
2-1 probably seems more realistic, just because I think something will happen at some point. Like, it's the NFL. And again, I say this as somebody who's very confident in actually all three of those games. But all it takes is, like, first of all, like, the fact that we don't have tape on Trevor Lawrence or Zach Wilson in the NFL, that's one of those advantages that helped Drew Lock against Houston 2 years ago. They didn't have any tape on him. You can go back to college, but it's a different game. And like, yeah, it's still football, but like the way spacing works, the way concepts work, like coaching staffs, when you have to deal with a rookie quarterback with very limited tape, is you're kind of just throwing what you can at him and hoping stuff works. And then you stick with it. But if Trevor Lawrence is as good as we all think he is, and I know that I think he's going to be very good if Urban Meyer doesn't like suck, that could be a problem. Because they do have some talent on Jacksonville around him. Zach Wilson's in a pretty good system for his talents. And again, we'll have two games on him at that point. So like, they could still throw stuff you didn't expect at you.
Before we get into the rest of the schedule, is this the year the Broncos finally end this ridiculous losing streak to the Chiefs?
That's tough. My heart says yes. My brain says no. I think this Chiefs team is going to be pretty good. I think the Chiefs, the fact that they have Willie Gay coming in from last year, I think he's going to be a problem. I think their offensive line is going to be a huge issue for the Broncos defense. Just because the Andy Reid installed, like, he brought in a bunch of guys who can run gap concepts. And that's actually one of the big weaknesses of Fangio's defense, the way he runs it. Just because Fangio plays too high, like with two safeties back, he wants you to run the ball. But if you can run the ball well with pulling guards, you suddenly have a guard going off against corners and safeties, which is what the Broncos did against Miami. The Chiefs could essentially try and do something like that, which forces you to then bring somebody down into the box. But if you bring somebody in the box, then they have Tyreek Hill. So like it creates that conundrum. And it was really smart of the Chiefs to do that, because now that they have Brandon Staley and Vic Fangio in division, Andy Reid went out and figured out a way to like combat that system.
Does that come not to completely kick Adam off the show, But does that combat Todd Bowles too? Because a lot of people feel like that. You mentioned Vic Fangio and the way he game planned and defense the Chiefs in two games last year. Does that also combat Todd Bowles and what he does? Because, like I said, a lot of people think that Vic Fangio gave the blueprint to stopping the Chiefs and Pat Mahomes and Andy Reid from Vic Fangio. So does that, if they meet again in the playoffs, does that combat that element of it?
It should help for sure. Because the offensive line was such a problem in the Super Bowl, just because they didn't have any good tackles. I don't necessarily think it'll help in the same way, but I do think it'll help. The problem with the Staley defense and the Fangio defense is, again, like, both of them are designed with safeties deep with the idea that they want to bait you into running the ball. And when they were playing against the Chiefs last year, what they were doing is they were trying to make Pat Mahomes win by throwing 5-yard passes 100 times with the idea that eventually you're going to miss. Like, any quarterback is not going to hit every single one of those. And again, the Broncos got a little bit lucky in the second game because Bradley Chubb got a pressure that stopped a touchdown to Hill. But if they can run the ball like that and they can just grind it down your throats, then you're going to have to bring somebody up. And that's a problem. For Bulls, what that does is it gives you some answers to the blitz. Like, you're not going to be able to blitz as much because they'll be able to punish you for it.
Okay. So I think if we're looking at that realistically, I think the realistic answer to that is no, they're not going to beat the Chiefs this year, which is sort of my statement as well. There are chances there. Like I always like to say, the football is an oval. It's not going to bounce, you know, correctly. It's not a basketball. It doesn't bounce true. So it makes sense that a lot of luck is involved and things will happen that you can't control. But in a vacuum, there's no way that this Broncos team is there yet. They're not going to compete with the Chiefs in 2021. And I'm okay with that. I'm not okay with it, but I think I've sort of come to terms with that. The next thing you have to do, though, is you sort of ignore those two games because, A, they play them in the wintertime, which, you know, December in Kansas City is an impossible task. And I don't even want to talk about the last game of the season. The only shot they have there is if the Chiefs are, I don't know, 14-1, right? Was my math good there? Probably not. 14.
It'd have to be 15-1.
Whatever, 15-1, 14-2. Who cares? And then
I hate the fact that we now
why
have
do they
to
do
add
this
a,
to me.
A game to math. I
don't
like
that. It. I don't. I'm not good at adding to 17. 16 was such a good number, but they rest everybody, and Denver's playing for a playoff spot. Ian mentioned that the last time we, talked about this on our show, and it was one of those things where as long as everything falls into place and the ball bounces correctly and they get a timely scoop and score from Bradley Roby, which he doesn't even play for the Broncos anymore, then maybe
Saints
they beat
now.
Them. Yeah, Saints now. Look at that. So then you have to look at the rest of the schedule. And I guess my curiosity is, how do they do against the AFC West, the Raiders and the Chargers, not just the Chiefs, because those are the teams they play the most this year?
I will be disappointed if they don't sweep the Raiders, because I think this Raiders team is basically Derek Carr, Darren Waller, and a lot of flotsam. Like, they have a young offensive line that might be good in a year or two, but they have a lot of young pieces. The defense is still bad. Gruden doesn't know how to build a defense, and Mayock has not helped him. They might get lucky and be somewhat close to average, but they're still, like, on paper, they should not beat the Broncos.
Is Derek Carr a better quarterback than Teddy Bridgewater, though? I guess that's the other.
I think so. I think, and again, like, this is a weird, like, we're in this weird sphere right now with Derek Carr, because all of a sudden Derek Carr is so underrated that he's becoming overrated. I think today people were saying he belongs in like the elite quarterback tier, which is total crap.
Yeah, that's crap.
But I don't think he's garbage. Like, I think he's one of those guys that's probably hovering around like the 10th to 12th best quarterback. So, like, if you give him some help, he's good. But if he doesn't have a lot of help, he can't carry it. He's that guy. But what he's good at, he's quite good at. He's very good at quick game, which is hard for the Broncos to deal with, because the defense is built to allow some of that. And so he can live on it. If you remember even the first year with Fangio, that was a problem. But again, I think he's too conservative. I think if you start to hit him, he panics, and he panics the whole game. Like, it gets in his head. Actually, Daniel Jones is like that too, unrelated. I was just watching Daniel Jones, and it's definitely noticeable. But it's one of those things, you have to get to him. The good news is the Raiders offensive line is now weak enough that that could happen. And I think Josh Jacobs is overrated. Josh Jacobs looks like a number one running back, but he doesn't perform like one.
Ugh. You know, I drafted him in my fantasy league. I appreciate that.
Sorry.
That's okay.
But you look at the receivers, like if Henry Ruggs comes on, I think the Raiders offense could be kind of scary just because Henry Ruggs does have that kind of speed. But last year showed some serious issues. And Bryan Edwards didn't do a whole lot. And granted, like coming out of training camp, they're saying he's going to be TO. But until we see it, like right now, they don't really have receivers. They have Darren Waller, who might hold out. We don't know yet. He wants a new contract for sure. But then again, you look at their defense, like they just signed KJ Wright. Like that's their big guy on defense. It's the guy they signed like a week ago, or like 3 days ago or something like that.
How about the Chargers?
Their level.
Where
Chargers are a wild card, I think. I think Herbert's going to be legit. And that sucks because the Broncos are going to have at least the third best quarterback in the division for a while. Unless they figure that out. And I've talked to a few people. I'm not optimistic about the 2022 class. I hope, but it's kind of one of those things like you kind of hope Aaron Rodgers or Matt Ryan are coming next year because I don't think a rookie is going to save the day. But so Herbert's going to probably be really good. I think he's going to come down to earth a little bit against pressure, but I think everything else is going to be better. And I think he's in a better system this year than he was last year, which sucks. You look on defense though, and they have some questions. Brandon Staley's system, he will probably have to adjust it some to make the most of the talent on hand just because they don't have the, like, think of the Brandon Staley defense, like the Chargers defense is essentially like a version of Fangio's. So it's going to be very similar. But then you look at Derwin James. Derwin James is essentially best as a strong safety. He's best around the box, around the second level of the defense. The Fangio defense normally has the safety playing on the third level. And Derwin James, that's why he fell in the draft, is because there was questions about how well he'd play that. On top of the injury questions, obviously, now. Their pass rush is basically Joey Bosa and then I like Asante Samuel.
Call that a
Jr.
question mark, right? Is that what that was, a question mark? Question mark?
I like Asante Samuel Jr. a lot, the cornerback they drafted. Honestly, if the Broncos would have drafted Justin Fields and Asante Samuel Jr. in the second round, I would have been really excited because I think Samuel Jr. is going to look like a franchise cornerback for Staley. You know, neither here nor there. But then they got Murray.
It's easier
on
to find a franchise cornerback.
It's true.
Is it?
But then they have a good linebacker in Murray. Like a good talent in Murray, but he hasn't performed yet. He was a rookie last year. Very athletic, sideline to sideline, but he was not good in coverage. So like they have some pieces that could come together. Their defensive tackle situation is kind of questionable. So again, like Staley's good enough that I think they might be around average. I don't think the defense is going to suddenly become good. And if the defense doesn't suddenly become good, the Broncos should be able to split those games.
Well, split. So not even a sweep there. So sweep the Raiders, split with the Chargers, and swept by the Chiefs is the most realistic. So that's a 3-3 division.
That's kind of what I expect. And again, like if things go our way, like maybe they sweep the Chargers too. Maybe they catch the Chiefs resting somebody. I don't think, like, if the Broncos are 4-1 going into that end, I don't think the Chiefs would rest starters. Like I think the Chiefs would probably try and keep the Broncos out of the playoffs at that point.
Rude.
I know. Bunch of dicks.
Who is the biggest competition to the Chiefs this season, do you think? Let's diverge away from the Broncos schedule and what we think is going to happen in the games. Who are the biggest competitors to the Chiefs in the AFC, do you think?
I think the Ravens. I think the Ravens are going to be really good if they're healthy. I know they're dealing with injury issues at running back, but and like the receiver core is kind of banged up right now. But like that defense is going to be good. And that defense is going to be scary. That's one of those things where like, I'm really glad the Broncos are not starting Drew Lock, hopefully into that game, just because the Ravens, like, and again, like this isn't necessarily trying to bash on Drew Lock, but like the issues Drew Lock has, the Ravens are built to exploit that in a way that I think Teddy Bridgewater will be able to handle it better. But that game is probably like, I could see the Broncos being 3-0, ending up on like the covers of Sports Illustrated and all that stuff going into that game, because the Ravens will probably be like 2-1 or 3-0. And then that game could be like a rude wake-up call if that happens, just because I do think there might be a tier difference between those two teams unless things go the Broncos' way. I'm kind of nervous about how Fangio is going to deal with a running quarterback like Lamar Jackson, just because we haven't seen it. We haven't seen Fangio have to deal with that kind of running threat. And the way the Broncos' defense is built, like, if you can get like Malik Reed reading him or trying to down block on him, like, that could be a problem. He has issues with gap concepts, and the Ravens run a lot of it.
So the Ravens are your pick to challenge the Chiefs. What are your thoughts on, so another team that sort of stands out to me, and obviously there's the Bills, there's, you know, like you said, the Ravens. The team that sort of stands out to me is the Titans. And, you know, I'm like, I've said a couple of times now, I'm high on Tannehill as being the dark horse for the MVP, as being, you know, sort of the, that outside team of, you know, with Derrick Henry running the football, they've got offensive weapons. They've got a solid defense. They, to me, seem like maybe the team that is the most prepared to take on the Chiefs and take on that challenge. That's the direction I sort of lean. Do you see the Titans as a challenger, or are they sort of a faker on that?
I don't think they're a faker. I just have a lot of questions about their defense. Just because ever since they lost Dean Pease 2 years ago, and their defense was built to kind of – Dean Pease is one of those weird coordinators that he can make a pass rush out of anything, just because he sends corners, sends safety, sends, like, everybody. The Ravens do this too, honestly. That's one of the reasons that the Ravens are scary to me.
Wink Martindale.
Yes. But they're good at that. And again, like, it's one of those things that, like, if you have a coordinator that does that and then you lose that guy, you feel it because you don't necessarily – like, the Ravens have a pass rush, but the Titans didn't have a very good edge rush last year. And that's one of the reasons they fell off really hard on defense, because Mike Vrabel didn't make up for the difference. And so I have questions about it now. And I don't believe in Bud Dupree, but I think you're right on the offense. I think Tannehill, if Derrick Henry stays healthy, like, Tannehill's going to be in the running for the MVP because they're going to have to score with people.
One team that gets thrown out by, to me, when I did a Broncos preview story, when I talked to a couple of the sportsbooks directors, they really think the Cleveland Browns are a team that can take that next step because of the way they performed last year. And it didn't go the way they wanted to in the playoffs, obviously. But they think that experience will help this team, will help Baker Mayfield. What do you think about the Browns and them potentially taking that next step this year?
I like them a lot more than I know the analytics does. Football Outsiders actually thinks they're going to be like a 9-win team, and I don't think they're going to be that bad. I think they're going to probably be second in the AFC North, just because I think the Steelers are going to be down. I think Big Ben is washed. I think we're going to see like zombie Peyton Manning out of Big Ben this year. But I think the Browns, they have the offensive line, they have the pieces on defense to be quite good. At that point, the question is Joe Woods, who's their coordinator. But they have the talent. And I think Baker Mayfield is, I don't think he's ever going to look like the best quarterback from that class anymore, but I do think he could get in that like 10 to 12 ish range. And I think that's good enough if the rest of the pieces around him are good. And this is kind of their year. Cause once they pay him, it's going to be a lot harder to keep that team together.
Browns taking the Browns to the Super Bowl. I don't know.
Unless they run into Chubb.
Oh
yeah. They have a Chubb that
they've
can
got their
through.
Own Chubb. That's right. They've got their own Chubb that can bust through. That's, you know, Chubb on Chubb crime is always one that can be difficult, but we don't have to worry about that for a little while. We will hopefully we'll see two Chubbs on the field at one time, but you never know.
In terms of the NFC, obviously the favorite is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Yeah. Is there a team that you think that could potentially come out of nowhere? I don't want to say come out of nowhere, because when you look at especially the odds for the Super Bowl, it's Chiefs, Buccaneers, and then people drop off, and then obviously the Packers are there. But I think there is a team that could surprise people based on their new quarterback, and I think you've been getting hate mail over it. But what do you think of a team that's out west that could potentially step up and force people to recognize that they are a legitimate threat? And it helps to have – who I feel is the best player in all of football on the defensive side of the ball for them. But
if we're not talking about health luck, like if we ignore like the questions about health that like are inevitable in a 17 game season, I think the Rams are going to surprise. I think Sean McVay finally has a quarterback that he can actually, he doesn't have to babysit. And I think the fact that Stafford has been able to be a competent quarterback without a lot of help is going to make a huge difference. And the talent around him on offense is good enough to be, to put up some numbers. Like, I think you and I mentioned this before, like you and I talked about this briefly. If I was betting on an MVP odd, I think I like his odds a lot. Just because I could see it, like I can fathom it. Tannehill makes sense too, though. Like they both do. But the question with the Rams, and honestly, this is why I wouldn't pick the Bucs either. Injury luck is not in their favor. I've looked into this a lot. And again, like I don't want to get too deep in the weeds on it, but like generally when a team is really healthy one year, they tend to bounce towards average the next year. Like it's luck, you know, like that's just kind of how it works. If the coin flips six times and you get heads five times, you're probably not going to get heads five times again. And that's both the Rams and the Buccaneers especially were very healthy last year. And the problem with the Rams is they don't have a lot of depth. So like if they lose a couple pieces, they feel it. The Bucs problem is that they have a 45-year-old quarterback, and they have Trask behind him, and Trask and what's his face, the first round bust, Gabbard. Like that's not not ideal. You're not,
you said Trask. I thought you said trash, and you know what? It all works.
I heard Steve Tasker. I don't know where that came from.
Steve Tasker. Wow, that's an interesting. I wonder who caught that reference. Which listener? There's one of them. Which listener caught that reference? That's what I want to know.
I still have Chubb on the mind.
I can't. How do I follow that? I don't follow that.
It wouldn't surprise me if Seattle kind of sneaks up on people this year too, though, from the NFC. Just because, and again, health luck and all that. But I think Russell Wilson is going to be about like 80-ish% of what he was when we were all saying let Russ cook. And then I think that defense is slightly better than they were last year, and their defense was hovering around league average.
So I think the NFC West is really interesting this year. I do question Seattle because of Russell Wilson, the way that he sort of fell off in the second half of the season. Is that more indicative of just the way the ball bounces in a football season and he just couldn't get things going after a while, or was there something else behind that? But when you look at the NFC West, you've got question marks with the 49ers because you don't know what's going on at quarterback. I think most of us believe Trey Lance will eventually take over the starting role. I'd be curious to see how Kyle Shanahan chooses to ease him in. I kind of envision an old school, like, you know, have Jimmy Garoppolo drive him down the field and let Trey Lance finish, build his confidence kind of situation, which is things that we've seen in the past in San Francisco with Joe Montana and Steve DeBerg. Was it Steve DeBerg? That sounds right. I'm going to run with it. And so there's that team. Then you have the Rams, who we just talked about, who could be the challenger, not just for going to the Super Bowl, but potentially beating the Rams or beating the Chiefs in the Super Bowl if it's, you know, Rams Chiefs. And then you've got, you know, you've got these question marks with Arizona and Kyler Murray, and what is their move, and how far have they come with Cliff Kingsbury? Does that division make you sort of scratch your head and think that's a really good division, but they're going to beat each other up to the point where one team's coming out of there and everybody else is going home?
I think it could be that, or I think they could have three wild card teams. They have probably top to bottom the best division in football, and probably the closest division. Like all four teams, you could convince me any of those four teams are going to win it.
Go for it, Ian. Convince him one of those teams is going to win it. No, I'm just
kidding. And then there's the team that Broncos fans are probably going to be watching with a fond eye, because they've been told that this is going to be the last dance, similar to Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen in 1998. What do you make of the Packers? Because I was told by Jay Carnegie at the Superbook, who is a huge Broncos fan, it's always interesting to talk to him because he wears the two hats of being a sportsbook director and then wearing a Broncos hat. So he obviously wants the Broncos to win, but not in a situation where it hurts the book, which is why it was such a great scenario in Super Bowl 50 for him, because both won in that sense. But what do you make of the Packers?
And this might be the pessimist in me, I am not going to count my chickens before they hatch on this. At this point, we're hearing all these things about how Aaron Rodgers is making nice with the GM, how like there's an open line of communication and all that stuff. If they're as good as they hope, it's going to be really hard for Rodgers to turn around and say, nope, get rid of me. But he almost did it this year. So like they're a wild card. If I'm a Broncos fan, I'm not counting on Aaron Rodgers coming to save the day next year. We don't know. There's too many wild cards. Like there's a better chance that Matt Ryan's available than Aaron Rodgers right now. Because the thing is, like the Packers didn't put it in writing that they were going to trade him. They basically negotiated the contract. So next year he's still under contract and they could trade him wherever they wanted. And the year after he would be free. The big thing with them is they are really, really over the cap next year. And they're going to have to, if they're going to keep him, they're going to have to renegotiate a lot of deals around him to keep it all together.
So the Packers are a team that to me seems like they're going to fall off. And Ian and I have talked about this a little bit. And I think that's the sort of the consensus with a lot of the bookmakers is that this is a team that's kind of in turmoil and we'll see some drop off this year. That doesn't precipitate necessarily Aaron Rodgers leaving the Packers. So I think I'm in the same boat as you are. I'm not holding my breath for Aaron Rodgers. As someone who was as hyped as anybody about the potential of Aaron Rodgers being the quarterback of this Denver Broncos team, I just don't see it happening ever at this point. Like because what are we waiting for at this point? What are the Denver Broncos really going to be able to accomplish by continuing to run Teddy Bridgewater out there if he's good? And if he's not good, you've got Drew Locke. I just am not seeing it. Nothing seems to be falling in place where you're going to get Hall of Fame quarterback Aaron Rodgers coming in to finish his career a la Peyton Manning.
The big concern I have with Aaron Rodgers next year versus this year is the roster was built to capitalize on an Aaron Rodgers run this season. They had Von Miller, Kareem Jackson, all these guys. Like, and I've talked about this before on Cover 2 quite a bit. Like they have I want to say like 30 players on 1 year contracts right now. Whereas next year, probably Von Miller's gone. And again, like I'm not rooting for any of this, but it's just realistic. Von Miller's probably gone. Kareem Jackson's almost definitely gone. Melvin Gordon's gone. So like if you bring in Aaron Rodgers next year, what are you building around him and how much better can he make what you have compared to this year? Like if the Broncos had him this year, they're a Super Bowl contender. If they have him next year, they're probably a playoff team, which again, like, considering where we are right now,
I take that. Yes, please sign up.
Yeah. I'm not saying like, don't do that, but George Payton, this is the guy who refused to trade Drew Locke for Matt Stafford. Like if he doesn't think Aaron Rodgers is going to be the difference between them going in deep in the playoffs, he might not even pull the deal on a 38-year-old quarterback.
For now, we have to deal with the Broncos, hopefully, in Joe's optimistic view, being an 11-win team and being a playoff team.
You've been listening to Mile High Report Radio. Get involved in the discussion at milehighreport.com. And as always, go Broncos!